You are listening to a podcast from Raritan Valley Community College.
Thank you very much. Welcome, everybody. And by the way, Jim is fine. None of this Mr. Borelli business. I think that's my dad. So, all right. We wanted to talk to you a little bit today about credit unions. I'm sure that you've all realized that we have a lot of media coverage on the financial services industry. Most of it hasn't been good lately. What hopefully we can do today is give you a little information about some different types of financial services organizations. Not all are as bad as everybody seems to portray in the media. So today, I'd like to talk to you a little bit about credit unions and their history, membership of credit unions, how they're regulated, our regulatory agency, which is the National Credit Union Administration, how we compare with banks, and I'm going to talk a little bit about Affinity just to give you some real-life examples of a credit union in action. How many in here have ever heard of a credit union? Would anybody be willing to tell me what they think a credit union is? Perhaps a $5 Starbucks gift card for anyone that gives it a shot would help. Anybody? Yes, sir.
Pretty much you get a certain amount of money, which is your credit limit, that you are allowed to borrow. And for example, in the car business, you can get a term and an interest rate. Thank you. You get a term and an interest rate, for example, $100,000 out of that money. If you pay in 1 month, you get a certain interest rate. Pay in 2 months, you get another interest rate. You pay in 3 months, you get a different interest rate.
What you're describing is a very big part of what credit unions do. Your credit score and credit in general is very important personally for your personal financial health, and also it's important in what banks and credit unions do. They like to borrow money and lend money. It's really how banks and credit unions earn money and that type of thing. And that's a very good answer. It's a very small piece of what a credit union does. Credit union is more far-reaching than you'd expect. The definition of a credit union is a cooperative financial institution that's owned and controlled by their membership that offers banking services. So credit services is one piece of that. The concept that's fundamental to credit unions is the concept of a cooperative. Does anybody know what a cooperative organization is? Cooperative organization, if you think about the word cooperate, a group of people get together, they form an organization, and that organization exists solely to help the people that make up that organization. So the organization isn't formed to help people outside the organization, but people within the organization. Credit unions are not-for-profit, and this shouldn't be confused with non-profit. Non-profit means an organization exists to, profit doesn't come into the equation, and the only purpose of the organization is to help a particular group. They accept donations. That's not what a credit union does. Credit unions exist to serve members who are the owners of the credit union. The primary priority for the credit union is not to make money, but to help its members. Any money that's made is returned to members, and we'll talk a little bit about that as we get deeper into the presentation. Overall, credit unions provide products and services that you'd find at a commercial bank. Savings account, checking account, CDs. Sometimes they have different names at credit unions because you're not just getting a product or service at a credit union. When you put money into a credit union, you're actually buying into the credit union. You're becoming an owner of the credit union. In a sense, you're buying a share of the credit union. So a checking account at a credit union is called a share draft account. A savings account is called a share account because you're purchasing shares in the credit union. There's lots of other things. There's retirement accounts, investment services, insurance services that are provided by credit unions, student loans, all kinds of consumer loans. And by consumer loans, I mean credit cards, personal loans, education loans, and also real estate loans, mortgages and home equity loans on real estate. We also offer loans, some credit unions offer loans for businesses. If you start a business and you need money to get the business up and running, we can lend you money for that. The main philosophy of a credit union is a not-for-profit, but for-service philosophy. Again, The credit union exists to benefit the members, not to make money. And the International Credit Union motto is people helping people. All right, if we talk about history of credit unions, it all starts in Germany. Back in the 1850s, there were some real economic problems in rural Germany. There was some crop failures and a famine that happened. And there were some folks in rural Germany, one of them was a mayor of a small town, and they wanted to come together to find a way that they could help farmers get the credit that they needed in order to buy supplies to plant crops and make their farms successful again. So in 1850, a credit society was formed using the principles that would become the bedrock of credit unions going forward. And in 1864, the first actual credit union that was named a credit union was begun for that purpose of helping farmers. When those credit unions were started, the founders used certain principles, and those principles are still used today as each credit union comes into existence. They're based on these principles, the first of which is that only members could save or borrow. You can't not be a member of the credit union. That means you can't not be an owner of the credit union in order to get an account with the credit union or borrow money from the credit union. You have to be a member. Loans were made for productive purposes at affordable rates. In a lot of instances, people were being charged exorbitant rates by loan sharks, and they were not able to pay back the loans. So what the credit union movement tried to do was give people an opportunity to lend money at a very low rate of interest. And the money that was being borrowed was actually being repaid by people who were involved with the credit union. So the loans also couldn't be for frivolous things. You know, there was no luxury car loans at that time. So you had to, there had to be a need. Your farm needed a tractor or cattle or whatever else. You had to borrow for a productive purpose. The basis for determining the loan was a little bit unique at the time. It was not solely based on the person's ability to repay, but on the character of the person. And you can still see that today in credit unions. When you apply for a loan, it's not just your credit score that determines if you get the loan or not. It's your relationship with the credit union, how long you've been with them, your history in repaying other loans with the credit union. So it's the whole picture. And finally, the members of the credit union have to own the credit union, control it, and administer everything about the credit union. So this concept of credit union started to spread. In 1900, a man named Alphonse Desjardins learned about interest loan sharks charging exorbitant interest in Quebec, and he decided to use this concept that started in Germany and had started to spread throughout Europe and bring it over to North America. So he actually started the first credit union in North America, which was called the Caisse Populaire de la Vie, and that was in Quebec, Canada. All right. In 1908, credit unions came to the United States. There were some folks, Pierre Jay, who was the Massachusetts Banking Commissioner, Edward Filene was a Boston merchant, and by the way, I don't know if you've ever heard of Filene's Basement. This is the guy that started that concept of bargain basement sales and pricing for department stores. And they brought in Alphonse Desjardins as well. They met to figure out how they could bring this concept to the United States, and they actually drafted what would become the first credit union legislation, which was the Massachusetts Credit Union Act of 1909. That piece of state legislation was what would be used to provide the basis for the first federal credit union legislation, which would be passed in 1934. We'll talk about that later. In 1909, St. Mary's Bank Credit Union opened in Manchester, New Hampshire. And that was actually a group of Roman Catholic parishioners of a parish who needed a way to help improve their financial situation. So they came together and started a credit union. Just so you understand kind of how these credit unions started, it was something very, very simple. You'd have a group of people that would each contribute a very small amount of money. Collectively, they had a large amount of money when they all came together. What they would do is they would borrow that money to the individuals one at a time, and that person would pay back with interest. So over time, the money started to grow, the collective money started to grow. As it grew, they could make more loans, take more members, and it grew and grew and grew until you got a large financial organization. Today, credit unions still exist to continue to provide financial services and make sure that the members are benefiting. They're improving the lives and financial health of each of the individual members. Since, as I mentioned before, credit unions are owned and governed by their members, earnings are returned to them in different ways. Just to take a step back, if you understand the concept of a bank, when you're a customer of a bank, you're not an owner. You are simply a customer. The owners of the bank are the shareholders, the stockholders of the bank. When the bank has a profit, which is made through the customers, that profit gets returned to the shareholders in the form of dividends. At a credit union, the profits get returned back to members. And they do that in a variety of different ways. The rate structure is better for a member at a credit union because those profits are being returned to members in the form of higher deposit rates, lower loan rates. Member service is considered a dividend because you have some highly trained individuals that really have a totally different attitude towards serving people than you find at a large commercial bank. Another way is the elimination of a lot of fees. I'm sure you've heard in the news, typically, you know, banks charge excessive fees for everything. Their service fees, credit unions tend to eliminate those fees and only charge what they have to in order to remain financially healthy. Members who have accounts are owners, like we mentioned. The board of directors of a credit union is a volunteer board, and they are elected by a vote of the membership, and one member gets one vote. There's no distinction between the amount of money that individual members have. When it comes down to voting for who's going to run the credit union, each person, whether you have $1 million or you have $1 in the credit union, you have an equal vote and an equal say. Credit unions are chartered by either the federal government or state governments. All federal credit unions and most of state chartered credit unions have what's called share insurance. Has anybody ever heard of the FDIC? The FDIC is a government regulatory agency that oversees banks and provides insurance for commercial banks. The sister organization to the FDIC is called the NCUA, the National Credit Union Administration. The NCUA provides the same type of insurance. It's the same limits. It works the same way. It's up to $250,000 per member that was recently increased with a lot of the legislation that was passed in response to the financial crisis, and it was made permanent. The insurance is actually issued through the National Credit Union Share Insurance Fund and administered by the National Credit Union Administration. Does anybody have any questions so far? Okay. Credit union membership is a little bit more complex topic because not everyone can be a part of a credit union. You have to be in what's called the field of membership. In 1934, the Federal Credit Union Act was passed, and it limited membership to groups having a common bond of occupation or association, or to groups within a well-defined neighborhood, community, or rural district. So you had to either live in a certain area, work in a certain area, or be affiliated with a company or an organization. There was legislation that was passed in the 1990s, which allowed single-sponsor credit unions, which are credit unions that serve one company. For example, Affinity Federal Credit Union served AT&T employees for a long period of time. They could only serve AT&T employees. But with the passage of this bill, single-sponsor credit unions could offer credit union benefits to many different companies and organizations. It didn't have to just be one. There's different types of charters that credit unions have that define their membership. The first is what's called a select employee group charter. This is the charter that Affinity has. This kind of credit union serves specific employees or associational groups. Affinity Federal Credit Union serves AT&T, serves Raritan Valley Community College, that kind of thing. There's a community charter. So this is anybody that lives, works, or worships in a certain geographical area. So you might have, like, you could have a Middlesex County Regional Credit Union that if you go to work, if you go to school, and if you go to church in Middlesex County, you would be able to open an account. The third type is called a TIP charter. It's a trade, industry, or profession charter. Just as the name implies, you have to be a part of a certain profession in order to be a member. Things like the teacher's credit union or a carpenter's credit union. So it doesn't matter which which school you work for, as long as you're a teacher, you're eligible to participate. When we talk about regulation, probably the most important piece of regulation that we have to talk about is the Federal Credit Union Act of 1934. It was signed by President Roosevelt as part of the New Deal. It allowed credit unions to be organized anywhere in the United States. Credit unions could form under either state or federal law, and it created a regulatory agency which was known as the Bureau of Federal Credit Unions. In 1907, there was new legislation that was passed in order to reorganize the Bureau of Federal Credit Unions. With that reorganization, a new regulatory agency was developed called the National Credit Union Administration, which is the same regulatory agency that still continues today. It's independent from the credit unions. It's a portion of the government that's responsible for overseeing credit unions. There is a three-member board system, which was started in 1979. Prior to 1979, there was one credit union administrator. Now there's a three-member board. Those members are appointed by the President of the United States, and they have to be confirmed by the Congress. The President does get to independently select the chairperson of the NCUA. Some of their duties, like we mentioned, they charter the federal credit unions. What that means is when they have a group of people that, say for example, the business club decided they wanted, if they didn't have one of a credit union like Affinity to serve them, if the business club decided that they wanted to start a credit union to help each other financially, you would get a group of people together that were interested, you'd go to the National Credit Union Administration and say, I'd like to start a credit union, help us out. They'd let you know what you needed to do, how much money each of the people had to contribute, and what kind of documentation you need to put together, and they would actually be the one who would give you the charter. Another huge part of the NCUA's responsibility is supervising and examining federal credit unions. Credit unions are the most heavily regulated portion of the financial services industry. The government conducted a survey, and they made the determination that of all the banks, credit unions, mortgage companies, of everybody, credit unions have the most burdensome regulation. In a sense, it's good because there's a lot of insurance that members' assets are protected and that credit unions are safe. On the other hand, it does pose a bit of a challenge for credit unions because it makes their ability to do business a little bit more difficult. There's a lot more red tape to go through. You have to work within a lot of parameters. As an example, up until very recently, credit unions could not open business accounts for people. So if you were a member of a credit union and you decided, you worked for AT&T, and you decided you were retiring from AT&T and you wanted to start a consulting business, if you wanted to open an account for your business, you weren't able to do that at the credit union. You had to go to a commercial bank. There's been legislation that's been passed to take away that regulation, and now we can offer services like that. Even to this day, we're actively lobbying the government to ease a restriction against credit unions holding public funds. Right now, credit unions are not allowed to hold the accounts of municipalities. So like the Township of Bridgewater can't have their operating accounts with a credit union, but we're hoping to have that changed. But the NCUA does come in, they conduct audits of credit unions, they make sure that the credit unions are financially sound, and they, if necessary, will step in and put a credit union into what's called conservatorship, which means that the government temporarily takes control and makes sure that things get straightened out. It's very rare. To give you an idea, during the financial crisis, there were 40 banks that were taken over by the federal government during the most recent financial crisis. There were four credit unions. None of the credit unions have ever caused anyone to lose money. The next part of their responsibilities, of course, as we mentioned before, is that it administers the National Credit Union Share Insurance Fund. Just a note about that, this is different from the FDIC insurance in the sense that the NCUSIF is funded solely by deposits by member credit unions. So credit unions that are insured contribute to the fund. No taxpayer money goes into the fund. The FDIC is funded in large part by taxpayers. And the other piece of this is that no taxpayer dollars have ever been used to bail out a credit union because that fund is solely funded by participating credit unions. All right, as we talk a little bit about banks and credit unions, I found this little clip. to me, this is very amusing. I don't know if it's going to be as amusing to you, but since I've kind of grown up in the credit union world, this is the kind of humor that, you know, that we enjoy.
Hi, I'm a credit union, and I'm a bank, and I love you. That was a little awkward. Yeah, I didn't like it either. Let me try it again. I love you in a very real and legally binding sense. Wow. That stinks, doesn't it?
I wouldn't say
so. You know what? I have a hard time expressing my feelings.
I totally understand.
I mean, we can't all be touchy-feely types like you.
I'm not touchy-feely. I just love my members.
Ooh, that's good. Hi, I'm a bank, and I love you, my members.
Except you don't have members.
I don't.
No, I have stockholders.
Should I tell them that I love them?
You don't need to tell them. Just show them.
Doesn't Bob hugging physics.
All right. Banks aren't, we don't view banks as bad guys. Banks are very different from credit unions. So we do like to tell people how credit unions really provide something that banks don't. And that's a much more real and hands-on way of dealing with people, of helping them, because our members really do own the credit union. Whereas you're not just a customer. So most of this we've covered already, but I just want to review because these are the main points. Banks are owned by shareholders. Customers are not owners. Credit unions are owned by the members, and their minimum deposit when they open an account, that deposit counts as they're purchasing a share in the credit union. That establishes their ownership. Those initial deposits, by the way, are often times much lower than at commercial banks. A lot of times at a commercial bank, you'll find a minimum deposit of $100, $500, $1,000. That doesn't happen at a credit union. Typically, all credit unions in the U.S. right now charge between $5 and $15 to establish a membership. And I actually misspoke. It's not a charge, it's a deposit. It's still your money. As long as you have that money there, you're a member and owner of the credit union. We have a unique distinction as a credit union, as a not-for-profit organization. We are exempt from federal and state income taxes. Commercial banks are not exempt from state and federal income taxes. This is kind of a reason why there's some tension between banks and credit unions. Banks sometimes feel that puts credit unions at an advantage over them and causes some tension, but in actuality, by the nature of what we're doing, because we do not have a profit that we are paying out to people, to shareholders, we're not using our customers to make money for other people. You know, we're afforded that not-for-profit status and the exemption from taxes. Again, the regulatory agencies differ. You have the FDIC, and then you have the NCUA for credit unions. And we talked about the dividends, lots and lots. All right, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about Affinity. I have most experience with Affinity. I've worked for Affinity for 12 years. I started as an intern in college, and I kind of grew up in my professional career, grew up in the credit union world at Affinity. So I wanted to tell you a little bit about Affinity and how we fit into this history. We were chartered in 1935, so we were actually a very early credit union. We were established 1 year after the Federal Credit Union Act was passed in 1934. We're headquartered in Baskin Ridge, New Jersey right now. When we started, we went through many different name changes because we served different groups. Initially, we served employees of Western Electric. So when we were chartered in 1935 as Western Electric Headquarters Federal Credit Union. In 1974, we were serving AT&T employees. So we changed our name to something generic, so that we would include both the Western Electric employees and the AT&T employees. So we changed our name to General Headquarters Federal Credit Union. In 1984, we were solely serving AT&T, so we changed our name again. And in the early 90s, most of you know that AT&T went through some major changes and it split up. And there were several companies that spun off of AT&T, like Lucent Technologies, Avaya. We wanted to be inclusive because we were still continuing to serve those companies, so we changed our name finally to Affinity Federal Credit Union. Also remember, in 1998, there was some legislation passed that allowed us to take on more than one company. We had an exemption from like Lucent and Avaya because we were already serving them when they were part of AT&T. We had no control that AT&T split up, so we were allowed to continue serving the different employees of all those different companies. But we still could not take on new companies. But in 1998, HR 1151 was passed. We were able to take on other companies. So now Affinity has over 2,000 companies, organizations, nonprofits that are part of our field of membership. Of those, of course, Radnor Valley Community College is part. So the employees and also the students of Radnor Valley Community College can open accounts at Affinity and become owners of Affinity. The stats on Affinity, we're the largest credit union in New Jersey. We have more than 135,000 members and almost $2 billion in assets. We have 19 branches throughout the state. So I wanted to give you some resources here also. If you want to find out a little bit more, the National Credit Union Administration website is an excellent resource. It has history of credit unions, everything that we talked about in here, but it has a lot of the regulatory concerns and things that come up that impact credit unions. Also, they have a search engine that if you want to find a credit union, if you have family members that are looking for credit unions, you can plug in a zip code and it brings up lots of different credit unions in your area. Also, the National Association of Federal Credit Unions. You can Google these, you'll find them very easily. And of course, we'd love everyone to visit the Affinity site. That being said, does anybody have any questions on anything we covered today? Okay. Go ahead.
So what kind of benefits could a customer see from switching from, say, a TD Bank to Affinity currently?
Okay, that's a very good question. Like I said, you're not going to find a lot of fees that you find at other banks. Now, banks run promotions all the time where you have a free checking account for a certain number of months, that kind of a thing. You have to maintain a certain balance. The credit union is going to give you the opportunity to have your accounts there without a minimum balance requirement. You're always going to earn interest. Like all of Affinity's accounts earn interest. We have a lot of unique products and services. In addition to all the typical banking services that you find at a bank, some unique things at credit unions, because our mission is to serve our members and to help them improve their financial situation. So we have things like an auto buying service, where if you have a car, or you need a car, and you don't feel like going to a dealership, if you just call us up, you let us know what kind of car you're looking for, we'll actually search for the car with all the options and features you want. We'll go to the dealerships that we work with, we'll find the car, negotiate the best price for you, and make arrangements for you just to pick up the car at the dealership. You don't have to do any of that. And then Affinity finances the loan for you. Typically what you're going to find is a lot lower rates on loans, a lot higher rates on deposit. Does that answer your question? Plus, the other thing I want to mention too, and this is how credit unions work, once you become a member, even if you just open up your share account with $5, you're a member for life. Whether you leave the college or you leave the company that you work for, you're still a member. Your family members are also eligible. So once you open an account, your brother or sister could open an account. Once they open their account, they're a member for life. Their extended family is then also eligible for membership. So that's how credit unions can grow and how more people can take advantage of those benefits. Anybody else? All right. We have a little raffle. You all filled out your tickets. We have three $25 gift cards. Did everyone have a chance to put their... While Barbara is helping those last few people fill out their slips, the one thing I wanted to mention, I'm sure some of you may have heard already, but Affinity is very excited to embark on a new initiative with Radnor Valley Community College. As your credit union, we're actually going to be opening up an on-site location at the college. This is good for a couple reasons. That means that anybody who's a member of Affinity will be able to process their banking transactions right here on campus. But even more, what we want to do is provide opportunities for students at RBCC to get real-life experiences here. So we are going to have students working at the branch, and we're going to have some ongoing programs. Hopefully the Business Club and Affinity will partner for more events like this, help you learn about the financial services industry, not just about credit unions, but about certain things that may help you. And we have lots of opportunities at Affinity to learn kind of hands-on real-life experience. Hopefully we can do some things on, you know, helping prepare you to get a job in the workforce, resume writing, interviewing skills, that type of thing. So we're very excited about that. Has everybody had a chance to put their...
I'm almost there.
Okay.